Welcome back to the Sports Ticket. Wade Gerstner with you. It is a Wednesday. It is Veterans Day. Thanks to all those that have served our country and some that have given the ultimate sacrifice. We appreciate what all of them have done for our country. And we also are thankful to have the freedom to cheer on our favorite sports teams, sometimes jeer them, sometimes cheer them on. And most of us are doing it from home now. And one of those Chiefs fans, or one of those that breaks down the Chiefs on a regular basis on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, is Seren Petro. Seren, happy Veterans Day to you. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, and I echo your sentiments. I think it was really well said, Wade, at a time that, you know, for first time a few of us in this country are feeling what it is to like battle something, right? We're battling the pandemic, and we've got brave men and women that are out there you know, standing on guard for us every single day. This kind of feeling is something that they you know, embrace on a regular basis so that all of us can live under that, you know, live free in this country. I couldn't echo your sentiments more.
I appreciate that, and we appreciate everybody and what they do for our country, and we're so happy to talk sports again, because there for a while, I think one of the last times I talked with you, we were questioning whether or not we were going to have an NFL season, we're going to have any college football, and luckily we have, just in a different form to an extent. Let's start with on the field with the Chiefs and the Panthers this past weekend. Carolina giving the Chiefs all they could handle, 33-31 was the final. I have two ways of looking at this, and I'd like to know which way you look at it. Because I've talked to various Chiefs fans, and this is kind of what I gather. One, the Chiefs are vulnerable when teams play with nothing to lose, and they will get everybody's best shot. And then two, I look at it as, or the Chiefs won with what might have been their B-minus or C-plus game, and the other team brought it, had nothing to lose, played very well, considering that Carolina had more yards, more rush yards, even in the turnover margin, actually technically a plus one, time of possession, 38 minutes to 22 minutes. And yet the Chiefs left, what was it, maybe 8-9 points off the field. They didn't score with a missed field goal, a missed extra point, a missed touchdown pass hookup from Mahomes to Hill. And despite all of that, Seren, the Chiefs still won. That's the way I'm going to look at it.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. And the answer is both, right? You know, I know, and your second option there had a number of different variables, but I think as human beings, we always want to have a simple solution. You know, change one thing and everything's fixed, or identify one thing and we've now solved why things are what they are. And it's, you know, it's not as easy as just fire one guy and it's all fixed, or sign one guy or hire one guy. It doesn't work like that. There are a lot of different things that come together for the Chiefs. And I think you are right. I think, yes, Carolina, nothing to lose. They know they're probably not a playoff team in all likelihood now with what's happened the last few weeks to them. This is the defending Super Bowl champs. They're coming to play. If you're sitting there as Matt Rhule, you've got a chance to really instill a winning culture by going and getting a win against the defending champs that have only lost once. And so for all of that, let it all hang out. Bring it all. Yes, absolutely. Carolina brought their best. And to your point, I think you're right. You mentioned at least 8 points that the Chiefs left off the board in this game. I think schematically, maybe even Andy Reid looked ahead a little bit, right? Because I think, you know, part of what Rhule did was not just the aggressive play calls, the fake punts and the going for it on fourth downs, but at the end of the first half, when the Chiefs really were trying to get the ball to Tyreek Hill in the open field, you know, they doubled him on two plays, right? Because the penalty, they took the Kelce reception off the board, ran it again, and they were clearly trying to do a hook and lateral where they got the ball to Robinson, and he was going to lateral it back to Tyreek Hill, and they had that covered. They had clearly been drilled that, like, listen, in an end-of-game situation, end-of-half situation, they want the ball in his hands, and we're keeping the ball out of his hands. And so they just, you know, and that usually doesn't happen to Andy Reid, right? He's usually the guy with the gotcha moment. Now, Andy Reid had other answers, right? He clearly punched back, and when they jumped out to him, he had plenty left in the tank and left on the play sheet to go get calls. But, yeah, I think they got an A-plus effort from a C team, and they being an A team probably brought, like, I like that B minus, right? Because they did some things right too. Maybe it's a C plus effort and got the win. And during the course of a season, you know, you could talk about being up and we're taking everybody the same. You can't do it. You can't play what, if you're going to make a Super Bowl run, is 19 or 20 games at the highest level. Now, you play the last three or four, you know, in the playoffs and coming down the stretch. But these dog day games, you know, to find a way to win when you're not at your best, that's the mark of a great team, and that's what the Chiefs did.
I've heard many people talk about the formula to beat the Chiefs is you hog the time of possession, you keep the Chiefs' offense on the sideline. That makes sense. I'm waiting for a team to do this, and I think Matt Rhule is the closest to have done it. I'm surprised more teams haven't done it. And that is, it's been proven pretty much that we saw it in the playoff run last year. You might be able to hold the Chiefs offense down for a while, but for four quarters, it's just not going to happen. We saw it in the 2018 AFC title game in the second half against the Patriots. Your best defense against the Chiefs offense is actually your offense. Are you surprised a little bit that there aren't more teams, or maybe this will start the trend in regards to, like, if I was playing the Chiefs and my great coaching prowess of coaching flag football, I rely on this, that if I'm playing a team that's better than me, I'm not punting the ball to them hardly ever. In fact, I probably go into the game and say, listen, we're not punting today unless we're way ahead, or if we're like deep in our own territory, inside our own 20, 25, whatever the case may be. I'm waiting for a coach at some point, and we've seen it at times, maybe the Raiders a little bit went for it on fourth down. They knew they were going to go it on fourth down, so that changed their play calling on third and eight because they're like, hey, we're going to go for it no matter what. We saw it with Harbaugh last year with the Ravens, and we certainly saw it with Matt Rhule, and I was surprised the Jets didn't do it. But about the thinking of, listen, if it's at our own 30 and it's fourth and five or less, we're going for it every time, because if we punt it, it doesn't matter where we put the Chiefs on the field. I'm going to trust my offense, keep the ball in my possession. I'm going to make that Chiefs defense stop me to get 10 yards and not three downs, but four downs. Are you surprised more teams don't do that? Is it just unconventional thinking that people haven't really come around to yet?
You know, yes, that's part of it, right? It's like on-base percentage. Why did it take 140 years for the sport of baseball to understand that on-base percentage is more important than batting average?
Yeah.
They just resisted it forever. And I think going for it on fourth down is the same kind of thing. And I think we will get to a point where today on-base percentage is valued, right? It has its proper value in the game of baseball, and I think going for it on fourth down will be valued. I will say this just as a sidebar. You know, all the math on going for it on fourth down is based upon limited, teams limiting how often they go for it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start going for it more, that's going to change the calculus a little bit.
Sure.
Okay, now teams leave their regular defense out there. They don't pack the box on a fourth and one because they know that this team's going to go for it on every fourth and one, so they're playing more of a traditional defense. So does that take away some of the big plays? I mean, there's other things that will be in it. But I think at essence, you know, what was going on in baseball was, well, you know, 305 is a great batting average. That's a great player, so I put him in every single day. You know, well, never mind that he never walks and he's got a 310 on base percentage, and the guy with a 245 batting average that walks all the time has a 375 on base percentage and he's better. But in the post game press conference, how do you not bat the guy who's hitting 305 in front of him? Because that's what history tells us. That's what the mainstream view was. And so they didn't want to have to sit and answer that question, right?
Right.
I think it's similar for football. We hear Andy Reid talk all the time, like, you get a win, any win in the NFL is just precious, you know, if you get a win. So in other words, a one-point win is value, right? That's a win. That's what matters. Yet during the course of the game, they seem to manage to not get blown out.
Yeah.
Somehow a 20-point loss is worse than a one-point loss. And I suppose there's some psychology to your team, right? You don't want your team constantly taking beatings, and maybe a team does feel better about itself and plays with more confidence moving forward if it loses by 3 instead of 23. But I think what you saw with Matt Rhule and what you'll see more from coaches is, like, particularly when you're outgunned, right? It's read Sun Tzu's Art of War, right? If overmatched, evade, run, fight another day. If you can't, then these are the things you have to do, right? If you're, you know, you've got to go to some atypical means of trying to combat what you're up against when you face a superior force. Well, in football, you know, we're not talking about losing your troops. Everyone's not going to be dead at the end of the game, right? So from that standpoint, you're going to survive. So that takes out a lot of elements of it. The next thing is, it only matters if you win. There's no top 25 ranking that's coming out.
Yep.
So it only matters if you win. So don't worry. Look, Matt Rhule very easily could have missed on the fourth down fake punt, right? The throw doesn't go. Chiefs
sure.
take over short field. They get a touchdown. He could have been stuffed on the fourth down that they went for. Chiefs take over short field, touchdown. And all of a sudden, he's staring at a halftime deficit of something in the neighborhood of 27-6, and it's game over. They're not going to get there. But they are no different in the standings today
yes.
than the methods that they, you know, than the success that they had. They're still a loser, right? They still put a loss, put an L in the loss column. So I think that's one of the things. And I think the boldest thing he did was going for it on, or maybe not boldest, but the smartest one that people don't really see the second level of, is the first onside kick that they didn't get. First
yes.
of all, they almost got it.
Yes.
Right? It was almost perfectly executed. If the ball's rolling a little bit faster, they're on it, and they've stolen a possession. And then they really have a chance to win. But even not getting it, there's next-level thinking in the sense that, look, we're not stopping Mahomes. He accurately read where they were. As a defense, we've thrown every trick at him. We've thrown every disguise coverage. He's now seen it all, and he's going up and down the field on us. There's nothing we can do to stop him. So what? The only difference between giving him 39 yards to go, which is what he had on that last touchdown drive, and 79 yards is how much clock he's going to eat up. And either way, we still have to steal a possession. Let's leave the clock there for him. If we, again, don't get the onside kick, if he scores, fine. Now we still have the same thing. We need to score and get an onside kick. No variable has changed there. It's the same thing. And, of course, they did score. They went for the onside kick, didn't get it. And in the back of their mind, they had to see if where Andy Reid has a problem in his play calling is he's overly conservative on fourth and one.
Yes.
Right? He'll go for it more than most coaches, but the play calls are not exemplary. And in trying to burn out the clock, he's a little bit conservative as well, as he kept it on the ground twice and then threw a screen pass. And they sniffed that. Again, they knew exactly to watch our Patrick Mahomes on the run, and they sniffed that out on second down on that three and out at the end of the game. So armed with all of that, he made the right choice even when it didn't go his way on the onside kick, for reasons that you have to go to the second and third level of what the decision was. You know, there was a lot of game theory employed there by Matt Rhule, and I think you're going to see, hopefully, you know, as had he won, maybe a lot more coaches would be on board. When he loses, it doesn't get the acclaim. But slowly, they're going to evolve, and they're going to start making the decisions that he made as a regular deal. And it won't be a big deal when you go for it on 4th and 3.
Saran Petro, host of the program weekdays 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. So let's go a little bit further with that topic of discussion that you were mentioning about the late-game situations for the Chiefs. It drives me nuts when the Chiefs take the ball out of a guy that's getting paid now, what is it, $503 million will be the totality of his contract. He's the best player in the league. I think that's without question, although some people will debate it. Part of it because they're just jealous of Patrick Mahomes and tired of all the fanfare and probably seeing him in all these commercials. 25 touchdowns, one interception speaks for itself, and 101 touchdown passes, 19 interceptions is pretty unbelievable as well. And that's why I find it really hard to believe that when the Chiefs – I tell you what, when I'm watching the Chiefs play football, I'm hoping the Chiefs are in a 4th and 3, a 4th and 4, and Andy goes for it instead of 4th and 1 or 4th and 2. Does that make any sense? I shouldn't matter to me because I've got 15. But when it's 4th and 1 or 2, I got a feeling Andy's going to be the best defense against the Chiefs offense, and that is take the ball out of 15's hands.
It does, because as progressive as Andy Reid is with his play calling, and I think he will come around on this part of it as well, but as aggressive as he is with his play calling, you know, wise beneath his years, right? At 61, you're usually set in your ways,
yeah.
And how we do things is how we do things. And he's clearly proven to not be a slave to that mentality, which so much of us are, right? When you get older, your brand, I only buy this car, and I only buy this toothpaste, and I only do this. You're set in your ways, and you're not coming out no matter what anybody tells you. And we see that in coaches a lot of times. He certainly isn't that way in his play calling. His offense looks nothing like the Mike Holmgren, Bill Walsh, West Coast offense. That may be where its roots are, but you know, it looks much more like some of the college offenses that we've seen than it does those traditional Bill Walsh West Coast offenses. He's done that, but yet he still seems to be in his old mindset of, one, not having ever coached a Hall of Fame quarterback as a head coach, right, and saying, okay, I've got to dial this up. I've got to find the 1 yard. Either the old school, it's football. If we can't move him a yard, we don't deserve to win. That's actually crap, or you would still be running the ball 50
yes.
times a game, right?
Yes.
You don't do that, so that mindset has clearly been debunked. That's not the way to play ball. Yet at 4th and 1, he still likes just the old-school dive on the pretenses that his line should be able to beat their line, and if it doesn't, well, I guess we just weren't good enough today. And so there's that problem. And then, like you said, he also has never had Patrick Mahomes, and he's always felt the need that he had to have a crafty play, you know, where he surprised somebody in those situations. The ball was usually better in his hands, in other words, in his play call, than it was in Alex Smith surveying the field and making a decision. Donovan McNabb surveying the field and making a decision. But with Patrick Mahomes, that's simply not the case. We're looking at a guy who, I mean, you said that TD INT. Think about it. It was 76-18 coming into this year, and that was phenomenal.
Yes.
Right? That was already more than 4-1. Now with a 25-1 TD INT ratio, he's taken it to better than 5-1. There is no reason for the football. In fact, you're now not taking the safe choice, which is just run the regular offense
yes.
and put the football in Patrick Mahomes' hands and let him make the decision. You're actually taking the gamble by not giving him the ball. Recent history, recent math, recent numbers, and the eye test say you're safer just letting Mahomes run the offense. Give him a good play call with a good route combination out there and let him deliver the ball, because he is the safest option on the field. And I think that's been the toughest one for Andy Reid to let go of.
Yeah, you're doing the defense a favor when you take the ball out of 15's hands, and that's your own volition in those situations. That's why it drives me nuts.
It's exactly like when Blake Snell was taken out of the game.
Yes.
Right? The Dodgers went, whoa, boy, thank God he's out of there.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Change it.
You're taking the ball out of Mahomes. Oh, you're going to hand off? Good. We don't have to worry about the 17 different ways Mahomes might beat us.
Exactly. Exactly. You and I were texting about this a little bit. We didn't have a chance to really get in too long of a conversation. You said something interesting. I want to set this up for our listeners out there. If you remember the divisional, and I think this is kind of what you're alluding to in your text when you and I were going back and forth on this, because I was surprised watching the Carolina game about how they had no sense of urgency on that final drive down by two scores. They got the ball with 7:40 to go, and went back and I looked at the plays there, and with 3:35 to go, and they had all three of their timeouts, they only ran three plays, Carolina. They had the ball at the Chiefs 15, and I didn't quite understand why you wouldn't utilize the two-minute warning and make sure that you score, speed things up a little bit, score so that you still have the two-minute warning. And if you would have had that, and this is not hindsight's 20/20, I was yelling it at the time, like, why aren't they being, you know, quicker with what they're doing? And I was actually sitting there going, thank you, this is awesome. That works in the Chiefs' favor, because you're shorting the game and you're down. You're the one down two scores. But when you go back and think about the divisional game, I can forget what year, might have been 17, when the Chiefs went up to Foxborough and the Chiefs are down two scores.
15.
Okay, 15, sorry. They were down two scores. They took forever to go down and score, and Andy Reid was criticized for that, and he said, well, hey, you know, we got to make sure that we score. And they had Alex Smith as their quarterback. For me, what I was trying to figure out is, why couldn't you have two plays called in the huddle? Surely Alex Smith's smart enough to do that. We know he's done it before. Teddy Bridgewater surely is smart enough to have a couple plays to where there'd be a little bit more sense of urgency. But what you had texted me was something about the difference between a good and a great quarterback. Can you explain what you're trying to say in regards to what Carolina, this lack of sense of urgency, how that plays into what you're saying?
Right, and when have we, and you pointed it out, that 2015 playoff game, and when else? The Super Bowl that Andy Reid was in with Donovan McNabb,
true,
as his quarterback, and trailing by 14 points, and it took them, and I think there was 6 or 7 minutes, and they needed 5 minutes to get down and get the touchdown. That cut it to 7, or I think cut it to 3. Maybe they were down 10. And it cut it to 3, and then they were going to need the onside kick. They couldn't kick off again, use their timeouts, and try to get the ball away. They had the onside kick, didn't get it. New England throws out the game and won. And Andy Reid was criticized for not scoring fast enough. And I think there's, you know, the fault in that, and same thing here with Carolina, the fault in that is that the score is inevitable. And the score is not inevitable. The touchdown is not inevitable. It is not simply, okay, I press the touchdown button here and we get it.
Right.
Believe me, Carolina wanted to score before that two-minute warning. They knew what was there. If we're crediting Matt Rhule with all this next-level thinking everywhere else, his brain didn't just fall out of his rear end.
Sure.
You know, when there was 3 minutes to go. So he's aware of the math and what's going on. He demonstrated that throughout the game. The difference is you're talking about Teddy Bridgewater trying to make it go, a guy who I think had 9 touchdowns and 6 interceptions coming into this game, and Patrick Mahomes. And I said this for a long time, as people would criticize Andy Reid when I would go on in other towns, and they would talk about Andy Reid can't win the big one, and Andy Reid, you know, he doesn't know how to manage the clock. I said, listen, you're going to watch a total shift in Andy Reid. I used to say before Patrick Mahomes came around, I said, you know, if he ever gets the Hall of Fame quarterback, then you'll have an accurate measure of whether or not the guy can manage the clock, because there's a big difference. And we've seen it now, right? A two-minute drill, 2:35 to go, or let's put it in that situation where they took the ball. I'm looking it up. They had 7:40 to go, yeah, right? And they're making their way down the field. They're making their way down the field. It looks real different with an Alex Smith or a Teddy Bridgewater than it does Patrick Mahomes. I said, look, you have 2nd and 7 with the clock ticking, and you look out there, and it looks taken. Everyone's covered. But there's a guy 35 yards down the field that breaks open, and you're Alex Smith, and you know you can't make that throw. You don't have the arm. You don't have the spatial awareness to understand. I think that's one of the underrated parts of Mahomes is not just the strength of his arm, but his unbelievable vision, his spatial awareness of understanding that this guy's going to break open, this safety's not going to be able to get there, this linebacker's not going to be able to get far enough back, and I can drop this into this window and to be able to make that throw. Alex Smith, that guy's not open. He doesn't see that. So he pulls it down, he runs for 3 yards, he's tackled in bounds. Maybe he even gets a first down, but the clock ticks. Tick, 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 while you're moving up there. And now you got to burn it down, you got to spike it. Clock management. You want to be a great clock manager? Get yourself a great quarterback. Right? That's how you manage the clock well. listen, they're all putting plays out there. They're giving them options. But if your quarterback won't take the option, that pushes the ball down the field. And Andy Reid even said this about a preseason, the first preseason of 2018, and they did the two-minute drill, and the offense went right down the field and scored. And they said, wow, you know, afterwards everyone's asking him, you know, that was a great two-minute offense. He said, well, when you have a guy that will, he said, our first play, we take 35 yards. When you can grab 35 yards that fast, it leaves everything open in the playbook. Now we've got time to do different things. And the difference is Teddy Bridgewater versus Patrick Mahomes. There were probably receivers that were open, but they're not open to Teddy Bridgewater. They're open to Patrick Mahomes. He can't make that throw. He doesn't even see it. It doesn't even appear as a window. And the other, you know, add-on to that is, if you're a good coach, you know, you coach to what the skills are of your player. If you have a quarterback that you know that ball 35 yards down the field is never going to come out of his hands, why am I, unless it's going to open up somebody underneath? But we take out some of those patterns. They're not even available to get the ball down the field because we know that our quarterback can't do it. So why would we put him in that situation? You know, it's to exaggerate the point. If you had, Jamel Holloway, right, for old guys who remember a great option quarterback from Oklahoma back in the day. If you have that guy or Tim Tebow, right, it's great. I mean, he's a great player, one of the great college football players of all time. But if you need him to run a two-minute offense in the NFL, it's not going to work because he can't make those throws. You call plays for what your guy can do. It's Lamar Jackson late in games. Mm-hmm. Listen, they're great out in front because the run's there. It's available every time. But in a end of game situation, and when the run is fine, take the run because you can't run it all the way down the field. You'll run out of clock. Lamar Jackson becomes a very average quarterback because he can't just spin it. Those windows he doesn't see. His release time is slower. There's all these different variables that work against him. Great quarterback playing from in front, but from in behind, where he's had to be against the Chiefs, where he was against the Titans in the divisional round of the playoffs, he just doesn't see those windows. They can't call those plays. He can't make them. The reason that they can manage the clock in Kansas City, Andy Reid always knew what he was doing. He just didn't have Patrick Mahomes. Now he does. And they're the best clock management team in the NFL.
I understand where you're coming from. I want to zero in on one more thing about this. And this is where I'm trying to understand. Because Carolina, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong. But if you got a starting quarterback, whether it's Teddy Bridgewater or Alex Smith, I don't care who it is, and you've got the ball at the Kansas City 15-yard line, you've already pushed it down to the 15 with 3:42 to go. And instead of letting the play clock go all the way down to 5, I think it was on of those three plays before the two-minute warning, they let that play clock go all the way down to 5. If you just simply snap the ball 5 seconds sooner, you've got an extra 10, 15 seconds, so you score before the two. And I know you can't assume you're going to score, but they did eventually score anyway. I think that's the point I'm looking at is it that the quarterbacks need that Coach Rhule or even Andy Reid thought with Alex Smith, listen, he's going to need this full play clock. He's going to need most of this to diagnose the defense and figure out what we want to do here or if he's going to audible, whatever the case may be, whereas Mahomes can just be quicker mentally to process it to where they snap it with 10 or 15 on a play clock instead of 5. Because obviously another 5, 10, 15 seconds for the Panthers could have been a big difference at the end of the game to where they could have won it on field goal.
Yes, the simple answer to your question is yes. Mahomes processes everything faster. His intelligence, you know, we mentioned the spatial awareness, but his intelligence is off the charts. His football IQ is great. He's a bright guy to begin with.
Sure.
Tell that just from listening to the guy talk. But his football IQ is off the charts. And so, yes, he diagnoses everything quicker. There are things going on to where they can just be chirping some things in his helmet, and he gets them up at the line and can run the plays quicker. Yes, he's better at that than Teddy Bridgewater. But that's not to say that there isn't some validity in your point, that they couldn't be more efficient, that they couldn't have gotten things done 5 seconds, 10 seconds faster, 3-4 different times and have 30 or 40 more seconds. That's something that they have to work through. Let's do keep in mind that this was, you know, for all the performance, it was Teddy Bridgewater, a guy who really has only started how many games? I'll have to look up, you know, how many games he started in his career. It's still a smaller number, even though he's been around for a while. And so you've got an inexperienced quarterback when it comes to this type of late game situation. And then you've also got an offensive coordinator that last year, you know, a couple of years ago was like a quality control coach for the New Orleans Saints, goes to LSU. He's not even the offensive coordinator. He's the passing game coordinator at LSU.
Right.
And now he's a first-time offensive coordinator. So how much was his head swimming? How much is the speed of the play calls? And by the way, 42 starts. So not nothing, but
right.
42 starts for Teddy Bridgewater in his career. Not a lot of situations like that. And then an offensive coordinator that has been great. His, I mean, there's no doubt his week of game prep is fantastic. There's no doubt his play calling has been exemplary at times, and he's done a great job with limited weapons for them. And one day he may be rocket fast at making those calls. But I think there are a lot of other elements that are out there that contributed to it. Again, you know, we want one thing to be the problem. Reality sure. is it's many things that are working. Let's also listen, Matt Rhule is in year 7 as a head coach. Year 7, 3 years at Temple, 3 years at Baylor, and now he's already in the NFL. So there's a lot of football that Matt Rhule hasn't seen. It's year 22 right now for right. Andy Reid as a head coach, and his coaching staff has a lot of time as well in these situations. So your point's valid. Carolina needs to be faster. There's no doubt. You are right. They have to get down the field quicker than that in that situation. I think they also knew that they wanted to go for the onside kick, and so they were going to put it all on that onside kick. And that last possession was a little bit of gravy,
yeah.
but they were able to go ahead and get it. But they were willing to say, we're going to get this score, and we're going to get the onside kick, and that's our way to win. And he let it all hang out. He ended up getting a second option. But you know, those are all it's what makes football the great game, right?
Yeah.
Physicality is there, but it's also one of the greatest chess matches that's played on a regular basis.
No doubt. Sir Petro, host of the program weekdays 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB, our guest today on A Sports Ticket. A couple more for you before we let you go, before they're off the wall. Harrison Butker, should we be concerned? I've heard so many people make the excuse of the hold. I've really been paying close attention to what Butker's done since the Charger game. I mean, that's really when things started to go a little bit south in regards to his accuracy. And I've noticed on extra points the last couple of weeks, you know, he can choose where he wants it, right hash, left hash, middle. And he's been going more from the hash marks when it comes to the field goals. And when he lined up for that 48-yard field goal, and by the way, 48-yard field goal is not a gimme. For Butker, I would guess he probably should make that 8 out of 10 times maybe more, I don't know. But he's a really good kicker from long distance. We know that. And he was lined up at the right hash. And before he even kicked it, I told my son, I said, he's going to miss this left. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, it seems to me, based on my recollection, my old brain, that when he kicks in the right hash, he tends to pull it and miss it left if he does. And I know he's got the wind he's trying to factor in. I know that was an issue the other day. Having said all of that, is it just simply mental? I mean, if the guy can boom 55-yarders, 58-yarders, he's pretty much automatic even beyond 40 yards. But then the 33-yard extra points where he's moving around left hash, right hash, middle, it's almost like he's searching. Is it really the holder's fault in this situation, or is it all between the ears for Butker?
You know, and again, many things, right? It is a different holder, so I don't think you can just exclude that. Dave Tope wants to put none of the blame on Tommy Townsend. Andy Reid, last Monday, a week ago, yesterday, or 2 days ago, was saying, you know, they got to work on this. They. So I questioned him. I said, hey, you use the term they. They being who? Is it Butker and Townsend? Is it Butker and Tobe? He said, Butker and Townsend. He said, you know, it's just so precise. Just one little, you know, a little bit off this way or that way for the wind, which hash mark. And so it was clear that I think the hold has been part of it. Now, is it just part of it because Butker is having his first time that he's got to deal with some adversity, and so he's looking for anything and everything, and he's laying it on that, and in reality the holds are great, and it's all just between Butker's ears? That could be, but it's still a joint effort. The two of them have to get it figured out and have to get it right. Mostly Butker has to get it right, but Townsend's in the equation. And I do think that when I get it. That made sense. Like, oh, okay, so you're used to going from the hash marks, because that happens more often on field goals, mm-hmm. so let's do that to keep things together. But, you know, every time I see somebody, you know, an extra 6 inches or foot behind the free throw line, well, I always miss it long. So you're going to go further back. Yeah, and their free throw percentage never goes up.
No.
The best spot is right down the middle, right? There's all the geometry of it as to what it is. And I think that once you start going to the hash marks, you're surrendering to the mental side of it. You're saying, well, I just need a trick to get me over the hump. And I think he does need to junk that. When the ball is between the hash marks, kick it from between the hash marks and figure out what's mechanically wrong. And I think that's one of the things he's got to do. And one of the things they need to look at is he spent this last off season focusing on getting longer,
yes.
really maybe the last couple of them. And he became enamored and he got those 258-yarders. And I don't think it's a coincidence. Maybe that's, you know, it's been a problem ever since then, is that he's had such a focus on maybe wanting to break the record, get that opportunity at the end of the half, last play where maybe they line up a 70-yarder, and maybe too much time has been spent on the distance. Maybe, you know, it's just in his delivery, and he's got to learn how to take a little bit off to make it happen. Look, all the talent in the world as far as a kicker goes is right there in Harrison Butker. You're not cutting him. You're not finding somebody else. You're going to continue to work with the guy. Andy said on Monday, we need him to just get away, just clear his head, and come back and go to work when we get ready for the Raiders. That there's not going to be a bunch of cram sessions out at Arrowhead to try to get him to kick more. I think he's probably close. I think you make a very good point about the wind. It was a tough wind day, and maybe that was as much of the problem. Maybe he had the rest nailed down in the wind. This, you know, if he hadn't had the mistakes previous to this, we'd have just said it was a tough day for kicking.
Yeah.
Thank God we got the best kicker in the league. But because he'd had problems before this, maybe everything was solved and the wind made it look ugly. Either way, though, he's got to get better, because there's going to be a time where wasting 4 points is going to cost him a game.
No doubt. All right, Le'Veon Bell, are you surprised, or you think this is about what you expected the first three games with the Chiefs, that it's a limited usage and then eventually have a bigger role, or do you think this is kind of what it's going to be this year?
You know, I think it's going to be interesting to watch. I've seen him on runs at times where I'm like, yeah, that looks like the old Le'Veon Bell. I think we do need to understand that I don't think this was the best offensive line in football, and it's now lost, by my count, 4 starting players.
Yeah.
Because I think Lucas Niang was going to start at guard. He opted out. LDT was going to start at guard. He opted out. Kelechi Asimile, it was very fortunate that he was available. He's a starting caliber guard. He's down, and now Mitchell Schwartz goes down. So everything about the offense, you know, they play so well at times with backup offensive linemen that we just take that off the board, that it's not a factor. It's a factor every time out. They're not the same, you know, without Mitchell Schwartz out there. There are things that they've got to do differently. You know, they just are so darn good everywhere else that we forget that plays into it. And so I do think that that's part of it when you evaluate both running backs. And I also think we felt like, because they'd had such good rushing days, that we were going to see that continue. They were taking away the stuff over the top. The Chiefs were pounding away with the running game. But the last couple of weeks, I think teams have changed and said, well, we're going to attack it differently. And they've given him opportunities in the passing game. So there just hasn't been the quantity of carries that it takes for him to show. I think the jury's still out. I don't think he's Le'Veon Bell at his peak with the Pittsburgh Steelers, say when they beat the Chiefs in 2016 in the playoffs. I don't think we're going to see that Le'Veon Bell. But I'm still very open to the idea that he's better than he was with the Jets. The Jets have a lot of problems. Adam Gase is not Andy Reid when it comes to the play calling. I'm optimistic that we will at least see LeSean McCoy early type of production from Le'Veon Bell when there's a game that the circumstances dictate that. So I'm not ready to say that he's a bust. I'm not ready to say that he's going to play a huge role and win a game for the Chiefs. But I think there's more there than we've seen to this point for a lot of different reasons.
What AFC team needs the number one seed and a bye the most?
Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't think there's any doubt. The Chiefs have proven that they can win on the road. Heck, during the regular season, the last couple of years, they're better on the road than they are at home. They lost 3 times at home last year. Their only loss this year is at home. So I think they've proven that they can go on the road and win. I think it's the Steelers. And you know, I'm not sure if Pittsburgh is letting fans in or not. I do think that the smattering of fans that the Chiefs have and would have in a playoff game, assuming that continues, would be a big advantage for the Chiefs. So the Chiefs are the better team. Anybody who's going to try to take the Chiefs out needs every possible advantage that they can get. And so I think it's definitely the Steelers that need to fight harder for that. And if the Chiefs get late and it slips away from them, they need to begin setting themselves up for the postseason.
Should be noted, Mahomes never won a road playoff game. It also should be noted he's never played in one.
Yes, very good.
That's a good problem to have, to be quite honest with you.
I like that. I'm going to steal that on my show.
Awesome. Use it. All right, time for the off the wall before we let you go. The first one is just to set up the actual question. How old are you, Saran? What's your age?
I recently turned 49 years old.
Okay, 49. So 50 is just around the corner. I'm sure you feel better after I said that.
That's right. I've got decisions to make about 401k and AARP.
Man, I got AARP stuff when I think I was 27. I'm like, seriously? Okay.
Yeah, now I can actually sign up for it.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah,
right?
You're actually excited and you actually read it now. What body part of yours hurts the most as you get older, now that you're 49? What body part hurts you the most? For me, my back has gone out multiple times over the last 4 or 5 years, and I just messed it up recently. Now I'm feeling good again, and now all of a sudden I feel my knee, and now I can't play one-on-one with my 14-year-old son because I'm worried I'm going to blow out my knee. So there's just a couple examples for me, but what about you?
Yeah, no, I think you've hit the key parts. Like shoulder can be a problem, neck can be a problem. On a consistent basis, because not only am I 49, I carry the fat ass label as well, so that's more weight than needs to be on my knees. Although with the pandemic, I will say 22 pounds down.
Sweet.
You know, only 322 more to go, and I'll be at my target weight. But so the knees are probably a little bit more consistent, especially now that I'm trying to work out again. But when it comes to severe pain, when the back flares up, there's nothing worse than the back. So, short answer, long, I'll say the back.
All right, I'm with you there. We agree on that. All right, how can people listen to you? They can listen to you, of course, on 810 when they're in the area or in listening range, but they also can listen to you online. They can follow you on social media, correct?
That's right, at Soren Petro, S-O-R-E-N-P-E-T-R-O, and they can hit us on our 810 app if they would like, but always, looking to have anyone who will give us a couple of minutes. I would love it if anybody ever wants to give us a listen.
Always a pleasure, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon. Stay safe, stay healthy, and hopefully next time we're chatting, we're maybe talking about the Chiefs in the playoffs.
I like it. Wade, you're the man. Thanks so much for having me, and my best to you and your family.
Soren Petro, 810 WHB Kansas City, our guest today on The Sports Ticket.